Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Today on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking with Martin Snyder. He's the president of Main Sequence Technology. We're going to be talking about recruiting trends, why owning your own online database makes sense, and an article he wrote titled "The World Needs More Recruiting." Then we're going to be speaking to Heather Bassett and Bud Bernstein. They're both from MaineHR.com. And we're going to be talking about the 2013 HR convention. Great speakers, great topics, and great content. And today we're with Martin Snyder, the president of Main Sequence Technology Incorporated. Martin, thank you for being on the show.
It's my pleasure, Dave.
You know, you have done a lot of work with recruiting professionals all over the country and possibly throughout the world. You wrote a white paper called "The World Needs More Recruiting." Why exactly is that?
The world needs more recruiting for a lot of reasons, but the biggest reason is that the explosion of social media has created an explosion in social capital. And once we start talking about social capital, which is a little bit different than human capital, we have to start talking about recruiters, because recruiters are what I consider to be the market makers of social capital. And so we can start talking about what is social capital. And if it's okay, I'm just going to talk here for a little while.
No, that's fine, because I think it's important for people to understand the basics behind this.
Sure. So we're all pretty familiar with the term human capital. You know, if you search Google, you're going to get 23 million hits or so for the word social, for human capital. And if you search for social capital, you're going to get about 5 million hits. And traditionally, social capital is a term that was used in the social sciences, mostly. But it's becoming more evolved now, especially because of social media. So what social capital is it's defined differently by different people, but mainly it's the naturally occurring social relationships among people, and they promote and assist the acquisition of skills, traits, it's information, trust, and sort of the norms of reciprocity that inhere in our social networks. And so, and we all understand, especially as recruiters, that there's a lot of social value to how people arrive at where they work and how they work. And so when we talk about economic development, some of the things that we're looking for in terms of why the world would need more recruiting, not both from a for-profit sense and for mitigating unemployment and making the world a better place, by having more recruiting, we can have more accurate market-based assessments of candidate and job values. We can get better utilization of our development and our training resources. And one of the interesting things is that we can actually create jobs through recruiting, which a lot of people don't really realize how that mechanism works, but it does happen. Recruiters do create jobs where there may not be a job, so they do what they do. And, you know, what is recruiting? And recruiting are the elite salespeople of the world, and they do a lot of different things. They wear a lot of different hats. They're administrators. They're persuaders. But one of the other things that they do is they're ethnographers. And so skilled recruiters learn cultures, and they connect cultures. And when we talk about, you hear culture a lot in conversations about hiring and a fit and assessment. So what ethnography is kind of a qualitative method aimed at learning about cultures. So a typical ethnography might be to talk about the physical environment, talk about materials and technologies, and how people interact with each other and social structure, so, you know, peer groups and what the clans look like and how succession takes place, dialects and language and jargon. And so you learn about acculturization, and this is what a recruiter does. When they learn about a new company, they either as a target or as a source of talent, they dig in and they learn about that culture. It's one of the first things that they do.
You know, I think that's important for people to understand, is that, you know, when we're doing recruiting or recruiters are out there doing their job, it's not just placing a round peg in a round hole. It's really understanding the entire dimension of the organization, from not only fit to culture, but also to the players and how that they fit within their supervisors, within the structure of the organization. I think there's sometimes a misconception that it's something that a recruiter just goes out and finds a body, a person, but it's a lot bigger process than that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the job description of an ethnographer really, with minor changes, could be the job description of a top recruiter. They assess organizations and they assess cultures before they almost do anything, especially in the higher end jobs. So, and it's playing more and more role. I mean, ethnography too is a marketing practice, and just as a general approach to learning about organizations and how people behave is coming on as a business competency. So, you know, what happens is, what is selection? I mean, when we select and recruit, it's really about an exchange of information between people in the job market. So, you know, the actors in the job market. So, and of course, actors in the job market, like actors in other markets, don't necessarily have incentives to exchange accurate information all the time. You know, as we know, candidates sometimes puff themselves up. Organizations will overstate the value of a job or the benefits of a job. So recruiters, their expertise is to more genuinely, accurately assess what is a candidate's real value and talent and what is an organization really offering. And so those dynamics are very important, and that's something else that's important that recruiters do. So professional recruiters are experts at establishing the actual fit between candidates and work roles. You know, there's been some studies on that. For instance, the ability of recruiters and just lay people to detect applicant personality traits has been studied, and recruiters have been shown to be more accurate. Their abilities are more accurate to, say, discuss skills and honesty, global personality profiles. And human resources on the HR side, people really do place a huge emphasis on interpersonal skills, interview preparation, ability to work with others, alignment with culture. I mean, those are the things that help make a hire happen.
I think that's important for people, and that can't be understated, I should say, is that, you know, candidates that really do align with an organization are really prepared, are really ready and understand what it is they're going into, and that makes the long-term relationship a lot stronger. And that makes sure that the client company gets a better fit and a better long-term value proposition.
Oh, absolutely. And it's essential. And even today, if you talk to a lot of HR people, they'll say, I really would prefer to hire for cultural fit, even beyond skill fit in a lot of cases.
That's very true. So, that's true.
You hear it a lot. I mean, so they talk about it. So what happens is social networks really help form human capital and social capital. So networks are more than an extension of, the existing situation. They actually create a new environment. Certainly in Silicon Valley, it was really created by the recruiting culture. A lot of histories of Silicon Valley talk about it in the late 50s and 60s, how the recruiting culture and people moving and changing jobs is really what was the impetus to create that whole thing. So it's important for innovation and economic development. But social capital is not equally available to everyone. And it's in the same way that other forms of capital are differently available. Social capital is the same way. So there's, geographic isolation, there's social isolation, educational, and not all social capital is equal. So we run a meritocracy, or we like to think we do, but in fact, people who are well-connected, tend to get better jobs and tend to move up, and people who are unconnected, especially in the social world now, it's the same situation. Now, you hear people who do, submit 1,000 job applications and don't get any callbacks, and some people just make a few connections on Facebook or LinkedIn, and boom, they get a job.
Yeah, I think that really has changed the dynamic tremendously in terms of when I think over the last 3 to 5 years. 3 years ago, LinkedIn was just still in its infancy, for example, and people were like, yeah, it's a nice place to go. I can kind of put my credentials up, kind of put my resume up. But now today, it's like if you're not there, oh, God, you don't exist, really. I mean,
you don't exist. I mean, you don't have to be on LinkedIn proper, but you better have, either a good web presence or a good Google Plus or strong Facebook network or some similar.
Correct.
Yeah, for sure. And that is a measure of social capital. But again, what makes that all work is that the recruiters who work through those systems and work through those connections and the same function as a market maker for dollar capital is the same as the social capital. It really works the same kind of way. So, which is why I think recruiting is important. People don't really understand it. They're getting there. I think we're a long way from there. But here's the thing about recruiters actually creating jobs. In most models, search, matching, and hiring in the labor market, employers post vacancies, and then there's some kind of a matching function which requires job seekers and job vacancies to match up and produce hires. And the concept of job vacancy plays a role in the mismatch and matching models in the labor market. So there's not a lot of studies that consider vacancies and their connection to hiring. And when they do that, there have been some studies, and one study showed that something along the lines of when organizations report zero vacancies at the end of the month, 42% of all hires the following month come from companies that reported no vacancy. And so there's some economic metrics that don't really describe where that's coming from. But where it comes from is, you know, talk to any experienced recruiter and they can tell you anecdotally that they can create hires where there's no vacancy.
That's true.
It comes from because employer needs and employer vacancies aren't equal. There's a variety of needs that don't necessarily rise to the level of an actual vacancy. But when a recruiter does that ethnographic thing that they do, and they match a candidate and then sell the candidate or sell the opportunity, which is what is really persuasion. It's sort of a communication of cultural norms, talks about the expectations of the candidate and the establishment, and creates an opportunity where there really wasn't one. So in a sense, the recruiter's actions materially created that opportunity. But it also requires that skilled sales performance on the part of the recruiter is the sort of mechanism of how we need. That's, you know, one of the reasons we need more recruiters, because they actually make more jobs.
Well, you know, you may have just solved the economic crisis all in a matter of seconds.
Well, I wouldn't say that, but it certainly would happen. Yeah, I'll tell you what, in the real world, there's a lot of things we could do about it. And I've seen some results of this sort of mentality, and it is important. First of all, we have to understand recruiters really are elite salespeople. And, you know, the key to an interpersonal sales performance is persuasion. And persuaders, they're smart. They bring a lot of cognitive information to encounters. They employ a lot of psychological dimensions. You know, they're good at empathy and perspective of the people on both sides of the deal. And that's how they do well. And they vary what they do. And so, you know, it's kind of like in real estate. You know, there was a lot of talk about how the Internet was going to disintermediate real estate agents, but that hasn't happened at all. Because you're still not going to go out and buy a house without talking to somebody in most cases. You're not going to just click on a link and buy a house. And likewise, a job, you know, it involves your identity, involves your security, involves your future. You're going to want to talk to somebody face-to-face.
You are listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Are you in sales, or do you own your own business? If so, I want you to think of a number. Think of the amount of money you'd like to make this year. Do you have it? Okay, so what's stopping you? It's not your drive. It's not your skills. Chances are, it's your ability to find new leads. It's not easy. But what if, with one phone call, you could actually get your hands on as many new sales leads as you could handle and actually make that number you have in your head? It's not too good to be true. It's Sales Genie from Info Group, America's leading provider of sales leads, plus money-making email and direct mail solutions. No matter what you're selling or who you're selling to, Sales Genie has the sales leads you need. Right now, they'll give you a free trial just for calling. Call Sales Genie at 1-800-991-8440 and get your free trial. Call 1-800-991-8440. 1-800-991-8440. Again, that's 1-800-991-8440.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Packers.
Vikings.
We come from different places.
Uptown.
Downtown.
We come to different conclusions.
Half empty.
Half full.
But when we live united, we make a real difference in the building blocks of life. Children succeed in school, families gain financial stability, the health of our neighbors improves, and suddenly so do our communities. Real change won't happen without you.
Live united.
So give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Sign up today at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And we're talking with Martin Snyder from Main Sequence Technology. Martin, we talked a little bit about economic development and the role of recruiter in helping the economy. Let's continue on that path for just a few more minutes here.
Okay, great. I guess to sum it all up, I would say this. If people who are involved with economic development, with creating jobs, with mitigating unemployment, understood the role of recruiters, and some do, and they're learning more, if you put recruiters on the case, and you have recruiters assess candidates and master their local markets, their niches, you're probably going to do a much better job of creating new jobs and fitting people, providing them help and services to get them an accurate market assessment of what they can do and get them placed into a position to get them with the company than the one-size-fits-all approach or trying to do it purely electronically. And so we have to find ways to identify people who have a knack, who are going to be good recruiters, who are good recruiters, and get them focused on doing their thing. And in a lot of economic development, we haven't talked about that yet, and I'm looking forward to more of that developing over time. And I think it'll be good for the profession, and I think it'll be good for the results in our economy.
No, I think you're absolutely correct, and I do believe that recruiters are a key piece to the puzzle. And you are correct, there is still a lot of misinformation out there. There's still a lot of questioning why I really should use a recruiter, but there is no question that for the bang for the buck, recruiting can really effectively help your organization or any organization be more efficient.
I know it firsthand. You know, our finest talent has come through the use of recruiters at our own company.
Nope, you're absolutely correct. So, we're talking about recruiting. Tell me a little about what you're seeing in recruiter trends out there. I mean, I think this is an area that would be very interesting to the listeners.
Well, I think the biggest trend, the overarching trend right now we're all seeing is that companies are finally, and this has been talked about for many years, but companies are finally realizing that they have to have in-house competencies in real recruiting. Social media has kind of forced that. And so we're seeing organizations develop, they're almost quasi-agency cultures within the corporation, which is both a threat and a challenge and an opportunity for third-party recruiters. And the third-party recruiters that are going to prosper are going to have tighter connections to their clients. They're going to be working more as partners with their clients in a training and mentoring role, and not just delivering on individual search assignments. At the same time, those companies are going to be developing more competencies, and it's going to sort of change the way the profession is done. I think, in a sense, and it's good that the more recruiting activity there is, requires people sort of, candidates become used to more context, they'll become more discerning, they become, in a sense, tougher customers, which speaks well to those recruiters that have the best skill sets, both as third party and within corporations. So, the word we're using, you're hearing a lot of the word sourcing, and sourcing is sort of another word for recruiting, because when we talk about applicants and applicant tracking in that sense, now, by the time somebody's an applicant, they're fairly well recruited. That's a late-stage process of the recruiting process, a late-stage result.
I think, Martin, would it be helpful if you could kind of lay out maybe some terminology in regards to what the process is quickly so that, if somebody listening is saying, well, late-stage, early-stage, could you just, give an overview of what the quick stages are?
Sure. Normally, and we were talking about this earlier, normally we start in certainly direct hire. We start with a vacancy and or a search or a requisition or an assignment. And normally we'll go out and start recruiting. The trend now is that we're maintaining or we're, hopefully maintaining what we call a talent pool, which is a list or a set of candidates who've been brought along, a marketing chain for each of the available positions. We start contacting them. When a person becomes an applicant, they've expressed the interest, certainly as far as government record keeping goes. Once a person has expressed interest in a specific position, they become a job applicant. And then they're tracked through, and typically we go through an applicant, then we go through an assessment, background check. These are all pre-hire activities. And then once we're hired, we go to an onboarding. And that typically, the end of the onboarding process typically is the end of what we will call recruiting in most uses. And so, in the recruiting business, we talk about contacts and candidates who are people who may not necessarily get the applicants.
No, that's good. That at least gives an overview in terms of, you know, people understanding the process. And we've certainly talked about recruiting quite a bit here on the HR Power Hour, but I think it's important that for each, there's so many different terminologies used, really.
Yeah.
And they, you know, and if you're listening, you might go, well, what do they exactly mean? I think it's important to understand that. When you're seeing the trends right now, you know, search overall, and I can certainly say from our perspective, we're seeing an increase in search. We're certainly seeing an increase in temporary placement and staffing. That is certainly
every single year. Every year we've been in business, the share of contingent labor compared to, you know, full-time employees has increased and is projected to continue to increase.
Yeah, well, I think it's, you know, it's a sign of the times, but at the same time, it really is a great opportunity for employers to, I like to say, test ride employees and really get them on board, get the project done, and they don't have to worry about some of the other things that go along with hiring and benefits and everything else that goes along with that. So it is a great way to start the process. But we're also finally seeing a little bit of an increase in the actual search, the perm side. Are you seeing that nationally?
Jason Salmon, there are, you know, in the STEM fields, certainly there's been STEM and healthcare. There's been a solid business. It didn't really even let up much through the Great Recession. Manufacturing and engineering slowed down. Energy is boom. You know, still boom city, at least domestically. So, you know, it's a little choppy. It's a little choppier than it was. And what's funny is that contingent hiring both leads as a leading indicator and trails as a trailing indicator when we have changes in the business cycle. So it's the first and last. You know, contractors, and there's still a lot of, you know, a lot of people are experimenting with different models of recruitment process outsourcing, or, you know, what we call RPO. And, you know, I don't know if there's a consensus anywhere yet, but from where we sit, recruiting is very core to organizational success. And you can outsource the administrative processes, but again, recruiters are very elite salespeople. They really have to know the culture. It's something that you probably want to, at least the closing part of it, and for the more abstract leadership and creative-oriented positions, it's something that you probably want to keep in-house or develop at least a long-term competency to handle.
Well, you know, you're talking about keeping in-house. One of the things that I know your organization does is talks about a process called PC Recruiter, and that is a database. One of the questions I occasionally get asked and have talked to companies about is, well, you know, there's so much on the internet today, and you can go and find candidates almost anyways. Why should I have a database internally when I can almost find anything I need on the web?
That's a very good question. The key issue is, and the most important issue is, when you own a private database, it belongs to you. When you do a lot of work qualifying candidates, working candidates, upgrading talent pools, that's your economic asset. Every time you add a connection to LinkedIn, and every time you qualify a candidate in LinkedIn and add data to a profile, you're building their business, which is fine because you get some value out of it. But nonetheless, competitors may use that data, LinkedIn themselves, not just LinkedIn, but other owners of social networks. Their interest and your interest may never be aligned or not always be exactly aligned. But in your own private database, that is your own private asset, which is fundamentally a different animal. The other thing is that the sources do proliferate, but you still need one central master place to keep your records, both for compliance purposes and also because there's a lot of value that has to come for different ways for different jobs. And so when your recruiters work up a candidate, assess a candidate, tag a candidate with the appropriate keywords, make judgments about their marketability and their fit for various positions in your organization, that information needs to be captured and contained somewhere. And it's going to be difficult because not every candidate's on LinkedIn, not every candidate's on Facebook, not every candidate's going to come through, you know, GitHub or any of the hundreds or thousands of interest sites that have come along over the years. So it becomes a central place. Now, you do want to use a database that connects well to social media so you're not spending a lot of administrative time re-entering data that's already there. And, of course, one great thing about social networks is candidates maintain their own data. It's a living, breathing thing which changes over time. But higher-end database products now also allow candidates to interact with your database so that through email communications, through sourcing technologies, they can update their records in your system. Not exactly like a social network, but in a sense that if you have them engaged, that those records don't necessarily have to lay dead like they used to in previous database systems. or where all of the updating requirement belongs to the database owner. But it's still, it's a good idea, it's a great idea really to own and build your own private data asset over time, because there's many ways you can make use of it. And of course, in recruiting, as it's now practiced, you know, it used to be we'd get an opening, we'd interview a bunch of candidates, we'd complete the, you know, make the hire, make the fill, and then we move along to the next one. But now, it's more of a continuous process. So the worlds of marketing and the worlds of recruiting are really a lot of the techniques that are coming together. So in marketing, we do a lot of development and engagement by commitment level, and we start off by, you know, offering a little bit of information or something of a small bit of value, and they start reading our emails over time, and then, you know, we might send out a, you know, a higher value offer. Would you like to take an assessment? Would you like to, you know, participate in some event? And so we have a really ready pool, and when that vacancy arrives, we're ready to immediately start contacting and getting to the closing stages of candidates rather than starting from scratch with name identification and identification of basic qualifications and such.
I think you're right. I think having some sort of database allows you to use it more effectively. And also the other thing that I would say is that, you know, as you pointed out, you own it, it's your information, and that does make a big difference in terms of being able to use and mine that data for your own use.
LinkedIn especially has, they try to monetize. You can only use a certain number of emails if you're a recruiter, and they sell their recruiter product, which they just announced a price increase on. What's funny is a few years ago, like you said, when LinkedIn was not quite where it is today, even 3 years ago, there was sort of a business networking. There was even a little bit of a social. They were social. But today it's very much, their raison d'etre right now is recruiting and job placement. And that's really the industry they're in. And seeing them as that in that way, kind of like with the early days of Career Builder and Monster, they're both friends and competitors. So it's kind of like a frenemy relationship.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, Martin, you know, we have just a few, about 30 seconds, 45 seconds left here. Tell me a little about what makes your system different than the others and why somebody should look at PC Recruiter as for their needs.
Listen, Dave, I really appreciate the plug. I think we're one of the only systems that's really widely used by both third-party recruiters and by direct hire corporations. Our background before we, 15 years ago when we started this company, was two of our partners were in internet, and two of our partners were in trucking and logistics. And it's funny that we didn't know what we didn't know, so we learned over time there wasn't really a lot of difference between third-party recruiting and direct hire other than who, what, and when, and how the transactions work. So PC Recruiter is a very horizontal system, and it's really ATS and CRM. Some people buy applicant tracking systems when they really need a recruiting software, and some people buy recruiting software when they really need applicant tracking, which are two different things. PC Recruiter does both very well. So if you need an ATS, we're good ATS. But if you need recruiting software, we're also good recruiting software. And I think we're one of the few choices that really covers both ends well.
Well, you know, as I've said before, that CMA uses PC Recruiter, so I can testify that it is a solid system, and I certainly recommend it to others. Martin, thank you very much for being on the show today. I appreciate your insight and your information on the recruiting trends, on that the world needs more recruiting, and about data and about databases. So I appreciate you being on the show.
It's been great. Thanks for the opportunity, and hope to visit with you again someday, Dave.
Absolutely. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back.